On August 17th, 1975, my parents were married. In 2015, they celebrated 40 years together. And just this past weekend, my mom said they were happier and more connected than they've ever been. On August 17th of 2005, Tara's mom — Tara is my wife, for those of you who don't know us — Tara's mom was killed in a drunk driving accident. When my parents celebrated 40 years, Tara and her siblings marked the 10th anniversary of their mom's absence. If we get to celebrate my parents' 50th, it will be 20 years without her. It is cruel and odd that each year Tara and I are faced with a day that symbolizes the harsh differences that mark our lives. Where I had as stable of an upbringing as you could imagine, Tara's childhood into young adulthood was fraught with dysfunction, concern for her safety, and fear of losing her mom up until the point that she did. There's a picture of Tara and her twin sister that hangs on our walls today. Just days after coming home from the hospital, they sit on their mom's lap, one fat baby next to the other, and their two older siblings bookending the scene. Tara's mom was 24 when she had four children under the age of four. At that time, she had a husband, but no partner, and a growing alcoholism that would shape everything. When I told Tara that this month's theme here at UUCWC was trust, she paused, laughed one of those resigned moments of clarity that hurts the heart, and offered, "I don't start with trust. Lying shaped my entire childhood. Either my mom was lying or I was lying for her. I know that I start with suspicion." This is how some schools of thought suggest it works. There is either trust or suspicion. And if you want to say, well, what about curiosity? I'm pretty sure the argument would be that curiosity is suspicious in nature. Andy Stanley, who, if you can stomach some theology that goes against everything that we stand for here, is this leadership guru of sorts. And he says, essentially, in every relationship, a partnership, a staff team, a family, a congregation, we will eventually be faced with gaps between what we expect people to do and how they will actually behave. You said you were going to show up at 3, and you're here at 3:30. You said you'd have everyone registered, but you don't. You say you're welcoming, accessible, green. We could go down the candles of fellowship. But that was so not my experience. And now there is a gap. Each of us, I have to believe, can call to mind something relatively recent when we were met face to face, heart to heart, with that moment in a relationship with a person or a community. And my guess is you do feel one of two ways. The, ooh, this hurts. This feels disappointing. This is actually causing me all sorts of resentment and dissonance and confusion, because now there is this gap of how you said you were going to be or behave and your actual realized actions, and they don't match how I expect the world to work. It doesn't agree with the formula of mutual trust and support, and it can feel like a betrayal. Or it can feel like confirmation. I knew I shouldn't have expected you to be on time, to show up in the ways that you promised, to keep me safe. Now, I can feel you thinking about which one of those you are, or the Tara, if you wish. There's no judgment about this. Those are reactions. Those are responses bred of our experiences, what we've been taught about the world, seen, played out in the world. Trust is a lovely sentiment, and I really do think it's how we want to live in the world. It's how we want to see the world grow in its exchange. But I can hear Bill Cox arguing with me. Suspicion is also about not getting eaten or not eating the wrong thing. They each serve their purpose, and suspicion that leads to safety, physical or emotional, should not be thrown out as if it's all fragility, cynicism, or a conspiracy theory. Those are reactions. The thing is, though, we aren't here in church to hone our reactions, right? We are here to stop long enough to consider how we are in the world, how we have been shaped, and whether or not these pieces of ourselves that were given to us by DNA or experience or whatever it might be will help us build the beloved community in which our principles are made real. Andy Stanley says, we get to choose what we put in that gap. That's his whole thing. We get to choose what we put there. Still trust or suspicion, but that it's a choice. He says that what we choose, which of those two, determines the integrity of our relationships. And he says that when we choose trust, it acts as a currency between one another, giving each of us access to the other's gifts, talents, energy, love. You can feel this. You've known a moment like this. Now think about that. In that recent exchange between you and another person, between you and a community, maybe this community, where expectation wasn't met, where disappointment interrupted your relationship or confirmation of your doubts were solidified, did you feel trusted? Did you, in the speaking spirit that shows up in body, did you offer trust? Stanley says, and this one is my favorite, that trust creates the load limits on the relational bridges between one another. Isn't that great? As free congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising one another our mutual trust and support. It sounds so good. I read those words and wonder, who would we be today? We, Unitarian Universalists, we, UUCWC, you and me, if our sole purpose in this space was to work hard, faithfully, as a spiritual discipline, just to trust one another. And not just do so inherently, but to choose to place trust in that gap when it arises. And in so doing, support one another. Would it not change the way we debated about those principles? Or the way we debated? Would it not widen the circle of who we could be? It sounds so good. Simpler. Harder. More active, less pie in the sky, at least to me. The only problem is, I don't get to tell Tara to choose trust, or that she should trust the world. I don't get to insist that our kids will be fine if driven in a car by someone else, or if entrusted with adults we mostly know for an overnight. I don't get to dismiss the very real experiences she had just because I didn't have those experiences myself, or because her experiences make me ache to know and hold. I don't get to trivialize her fears, her resistance, her concern, or the way one small thing out of the context of that pain can feel like all of the big and small seasons of pain made real again, just because I don't want to believe the world is as she tells me. I don't get to tell people of color in this congregation that they won't experience small cuts or deep wounds here. Don't get to say, trust me, as if I've got some omnipotent anti-racist wand that I've just been waiting to show off, as if trusting me means anything in the grit and tenderness of someone else's spirit over which I have no control. I don't get to tell our Christian UUs among us that they won't be tested here in community with our humanists or our pagans or our humanists in a sanctuary with mystics and everyone else. If trust creates the load limits on the relational bridges between one another, then it's not as simple as declaring trust happens here. We promise, we covenant that we will trust one another. We, all of us, must also be trustworthy, which is not to be flawless. It is to be worthy of trust. It is to behave as if we are mutually, interdependently accountable to one another's shy soul, as Parker Palmer would say. I wasn't, and I'm not, always very good at navigating the different ways Tara and I have come to experience the world. We have learned to acknowledge it as a cross-cultural relationship, and we do mean that to be true. The world depletes me and challenges my faith, my need to shine a light on the goodness. And I'd like to say, despite this, it just took time. It just took time for her to trust me, for us to trust one another, that we could find each other again in our differences rather than resent them. But the truth is, it wasn't time. And it isn't vulnerability, like we so often think breeds right relationship. It's that I began to hold her suspicion with tenderness, with want to know her, which is to say, believing it to be true. I began to hold her suspicions with a shared discomfort, without responses of disbelief or even shock, for that too is a dismissal of sorts. And in that holding, we both learned what it meant to trust one another with our hearts, our lives, our resistance, and our pain. You know, the spirit has a sense of humor. I had put my sermon script to bed something like Thursday night or Friday, but the universe provides, and I was given the opportunity to mull this topic over a little bit more. I made a call, a decision about something here at church last week, and someone with whom I have a very good relationship began asking, "Can she do that? Where does it say she can do that?" And I'm not sure that says she can do that, though I get why she thinks she can read it that way. The rush of emotion, of sadness, of loss, of defensiveness, of anger that I felt upon hearing this. Why didn't they trust me? But of course, it wasn't about me. It's not about me. It's that church feels different to this person these days. Authority, this person's and mine, and purpose and mine, it all feels different. There is loss on the suspicious side, there is tenderness and there is fear, and I would have missed all of that, blunted some part of our relationship that I value, had I not gotten to mull over this topic of the dichotomy, the false dichotomy of suspicion or trust. I would have lost that had I not wanted or worked to value this person's suspicion. Adrienne Rich has this beautiful quote that says, "It isn't that to have an honorable relationship with you, I have to understand everything or tell you everything at once, or that I can know beforehand everything I need to tell you. It means that most of the time I am eager, longing for the possibility of telling you, that these possibilities may seem frightening but not destructive to me, that I feel strong enough to hear your tentative and groping words, that we both know we are trying all of the time to extend the possibilities of truth between us, the possibility of life between us. Before this morning's first service, Maria came into my office and she very lovingly asked, having seen the script of what I'd be saying today, if Tara would be here with us. She's not. Tobias has a birthday party. That's the only reason why. But what I need you to hear is that it was her idea for me to tell you her story today. And 5 years ago, at the start of our relationship with you all, or 10 years ago when I began ministry, she would have been appalled at the suggestion of me speaking, especially speaking from the pulpit, her stories. And that's sort of the magic, isn't it? Or the miracle? Because she trusts you. If you cannot go out into the world to do so, be in this place. Be in this place wanting, striving, working patiently and persistently to be trustworthy. So that one day our experiences will not be reason for isolation or doubt, but opportunities to trust each other ever more deeply, building the beloved community. May it be so, and blessed be.